Okay, the next case then is appeal numbers 30439 KDJD LLC versus City of T. James Moore is present, will be arguing on behalf of the appellant, KJD. Clint Sargent and Raleigh Hensman are present on behalf of the City of Tier, and, of T, rather, and I understand Ms. Hensman will be arguing this morning. So each side will have 15 minutes for your initial argument, and then Mr. Moore, you'll have a five-minute rebuttal. You can proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. James Moore on behalf of KJD LLC. KJD is a landowner of real property abutting Highway County Road 106, also appropriately known as Gateway Boulevard. The county road is the main thoroughfare into the City of T from the junction with Interstate 29. The city decided to improve that 1.4-mile stretch of road, and it assessed all 33 landowners along the stretch of road for part of the costs of the project.
Council, because I know we have really limited time here, but so this is the first time this court has addressed an appeal under the 943-96 statute, and there seemed to be some procedural disputes between the parties when it came before the circuit court, and we've not really addressed what is supposed to happen and what is the statute calls it an appeal. Is it an appeal in a traditional sense, or what is your view of how that, what is to take place before the circuit court in these matters?
There's no statutory procedure, Your Honor. There's no case law providing guidance. Mr. Sargent and I talked about this at one point, and I said I'd like to do a little bit of discovery. I served written discovery in the case. I was satisfied with the answers that I got in the written discovery, combined with the appraisals that were done in conjunction with the parallel condemnation case between KJD and the City of T, and I said I think we can brief this issue. It presents primarily legal issues for the court to decide. We agreed upon a briefing schedule, and we briefed it to the court, and the court made a decision.
So the appraisals in particular you submitted via an affidavit?
Correct.
But there wasn't a summary judgment motion filed, and there seemed to be some dispute also as to how or whether an objection to consideration of those appraisals, how that could be done absent a summary judgment, formal summary judgment motion.
Well, the objection that was made at the hearing was to relevance, and the argument being that there's a distinction between special assessments in the condemnation context as opposed to special benefits, I think is what I intended to say, in the condemnation context as opposed to the special assessment context. That argument has not been pursued on appeal, nor has there been any argument made by the city that there was not a proper evidentiary foundation for the appraisals. At the end of the day, the city, in the condemnation case, used a quick-take procedure, which by statute requires an appraisal of the property before the city can get possession of the property in advance of a final determination of just compensation. And in that context, the city had to get an appraisal. It did get an appraisal. The appraisal is an appraisal of the property, period. The appraiser is going to make that same determination, whether it's used in the context of a condemnation case or whether it's used in the context of, in this instance, a special assessment.
So how is a special benefit in a condemnation proceeding the same as a special benefit for purposes of an assessment?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, according to this court's cases, it's been defined the same way in both contexts. The Emery case is a condemnation case, and it contains the same reference to the definition of a special benefit as the Hubbard case, which is an assessment case, and that is that the benefit has to be distinct from the benefit to the general public. It has to be unique to the property. And secondly, Your Honor, by statute, in the condemnation case, 2135.17, the jury has to consider special benefits. So if there are special benefits to the property, and if in fact there are consequential or severance damages, then the special benefits offset the consequential damages or the severance damages. And because the jury has to consider it in that context, Your Honor, it only makes sense that they would be the same, because the principle is that the landowner should not pay twice for the cost of the project related to the landowner's property. When in the condemnation context, when there's a determination of the before value and the after value, and you look at the difference, that determines just compensation. If there's a special benefit, it increases the after value, which decreases the amount of just compensation due to the landowner. So that's a charge to the landowner. If the landowner is then also assessed the same amount, the landowner is paid twice.
Is it just a pure market value determination, though? Because Hubbard seemed to refer to a broader concept of what might constitute a special benefit when you're talking about a special assessment.
It does, but at the end of the day, this case involves a constitutional question and a constitutional principle, and part of the reason we're here is because the circuit court did not consider the constitutional issue. And that goes back to the United States Supreme Court case of Village of Norwood versus Baker from 1898 that says an assessment is allowable when the property is increased in value to an amount at least equal to the sum the landowner is required to pay. If there's no quantification of value, if you don't consider an increase in value to the property resulting from the project, then there's no way to determine whether, in fact, this is a taking or whether it is simply an exercise of the city's police power or taxing power to impose the special assessment. And the Constitution says that you can only assess to the extent of the benefit received, so you have to make a value determination. And this Court's cases say it doesn't have to be an exact determination of fair market value, but it has to be determined with some reasonable degree of certainty. Because otherwise you have a constitutional problem. You have a taking.
So we kind of have something similar to the prior argument we had here, though, where we have presumptions at play and who has the burden of showing that there was an assessment beyond the special benefit. So it appears KGD would have that burden. So how did you satisfy your burden?
Well, one, assuming that the city has in fact made findings and that the city's findings show a special benefit as opposed to a general benefit. So our argument, first argument, is there is no special benefit here. The points made in the city's list of enumerated findings in its resolution of necessity in fact describe general benefits, not special benefits.
Clarification. You're saying there's no special benefit just to your client or to all of the abutting landowners?
Well, through the appeal process, we haven't challenged the special assessment as a whole. We've not argued that the special assessment should be invalidated except as to KJD. I think that a set of generic findings that apply to all 33 properties are suspect in the sense that they appear to describe general benefits from the project, not special benefits. Improved traffic flow is a general benefit. That is not something that benefits KJD's property. A signalized intersection is a general benefit that benefits the thousands and thousands of commuters who travel that stretch of road every day. It does not benefit KJD's property.
I agree with you on the highway. I understand that argument, but then you talk about curb and gutter, and you talk about fire hydrants sitting in front of your property. That's a little bit different than a general highway. Would you agree?
Then it should be reflected in the appraisal process. And we had an appraisal here, and the city's appraiser said there's no special benefit here. There's no increase in the fair market value. There's no change in the highest and best use. And keep in mind, one of the findings in the city's resolution is it changes the highest and best use.
But appraisal says it doesn't.
That's
just the fair market value. That's a little bit different than what we're looking at here in terms of a special benefit, isn't it?
But you have to measure the value. Otherwise, how do you determine whether there's a taking? How do you determine?
Do you have to measure the value?
Hubbard says, pardon?
Do you have to measure the value?
Yes, you have to measure the value, and Hubbard says you have to measure the value. I think that's the crux of the Hubbard case.
So Hubbard, you know, some of the things that you've plucked out of the Hubbard opinion, though, relate to a contested trial where the court was making observations about disputed evidence, right? So the constitutional provision in the Norwood case is that you can't assess a special benefit that exceeds, or excuse me, a special assessment can't exceed the special benefit. Okay, so that there's nothing about it that necessarily directs a certain, you know, the way to show that. But so here, you know, if it comes down to the evidence submitted before the court, your entire, as I understand it, you're really basing your whole argument on these admissions by the city with regard to an appraisal that was done for purposes of condemnation.
And
is that
fair? And of the interrogatory answers, Your Honor. So the second part of my answer to your previous question was that we presented sufficient evidence to overcome the presumption. And part of it's through the appraisal, part of it's through the interrogatory answers. The interrogatory, and part of it's through the admissions. The interrogatory is asked, tell me what you did to determine that there's a special benefit. Tell me what methodology you used to show that the market value of this property is increased. Tell me what special methodology you used to show that any particular factor enumerated in the city's resolution of necessity, in fact, is a special benefit to this property. And the answer was, we didn't do anything. We didn't do any special methodology. We just know from previous cases that where property is developed, we think the value increases. That's not evidence. That's not admissible. That's a conclusion. And with respect to the admissions, Your Honor, their requests for admissions usually don't work. They did in this case. Usually you get back something that is a denial and a refusal to answer. In this case, I got an admission that that there is no special benefit within the meaning of 213517 as determined by the appraisal in this case with respect to this particular property. I think that's dispositive. Unless you say that the appraisal on the condemnation side is irrelevant to the assessment side, that's dispositive. It's conclusive
You know, could it be relevant, but maybe a scenario where it still isn't something that we could determine as a matter of law, that is the kind of the end-all be-all of the question of the special benefit?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Maybe to go at it, is it just a relevance question, or is it whether or not as a matter of law, if you don't, because this goes back to your point that you think it's the same, the special benefit is the same. So,
which I think is purely a legal question, Your Honor. The definition is either the same in the condemnation context and the assessment context or not.
So if this court were to disagree with your position on that, then what is your evidence? What evidence do you point to that shows you overcame your burden?
The interrogatory answers, Your Honor, which again, and the argument, and again, I think this is a legal conclusion, not a factual matter, but I think that the findings that are enumerated in the resolution of necessity state general benefits, not special benefits.
So the appraisal and the answers are part of this record?
Absolutely.
There's not by stipulation, they're just admitted. They're admitted as
they
part
were,
of the record.
They were submitted by affidavit. There was an objection on the record.
Is there a ruling?
In front of Judge Pekus. Well, interestingly, the city argued that we should have a trial here, and I argued that we have a sufficiently developed factual record. And the questions before the court are primarily legal, and the court agreed with me and overruled the city's objection and said, I'm going to decide the appeal today. So, yes, there's a determination on that.
Well, do we know if the court actually received those appraisals?
Yes, they were in the court
yeah,
file.
I mean, but did the court say, overrule your objection, I'm receiving those?
Again, there was... to the extent that...
That's different than just they got filed. That's different than the court saying, your objection's overruled, I'm receiving those. Those are two different things. Would you agree?
I would agree with that, but the appraisals are in the record, and there is no argument before this court on appeal, Your Honor, that they are not properly in the record for purposes of consideration before this appeal. The city would certainly have to argue that they were admitted in error or that they're not part of the record, but it hasn't argued either of those things. So I think the appraisals are clearly before the court. And again, because because the essence of the case is a constitutional question of, and Hubbard says that a special assessment is limited by the increased value to the property from the project. And if the project doesn't enhance the value of the property in some measurable, quantifiable way such that it can be compared to, in this case, the $61,000 assessment against the property, then how can you possibly know whether there's a taking or not? You have to draw a comparison. There has to be a quantification. And Hubbard says that the assessment is limited. That's the analysis that the court didn't do. My time is up. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Hansman, you may proceed with your argument.
May it please the court. In July of 2023, the Honorable Judge John Pekus concluded that KJD LLC failed to prove by clear and convincing evidence that the City of T's special benefits specific findings in Resolution 21-04-04 were not presumptively correct. During that hearing, KJD LLC offered no evidence to contradict or to dispute the City's special benefits findings in that resolution. KJD's failure to follow the procedure laid out in Hubbard v. City of Pierre, available at 2010 SD 55, properly resulted in the court's July 20th, 2023 judgment denying KJD's appeal and the relief sought therein.
So what is your position on the appraisals? Are they properly part of the record this court can review or not?
The appraisals that have been discussed here today are part of the
record. That was a poor question. Not part of the record. They were filed. But are they properly before this court as evidence that we can consider whether or not the presumption was rebutted?
No, they are not, Your Honor. That's actually where I was going with your initial question was, yes, they were made part of the record by way of the affidavit, but they were never offered, much less received, as far as evidence to be considered by the trial court during the July 20th, 2023 hearing.
How about the answers to the interrogatories, counsel?
Those are also not evidence that was offered at the July 20th, 2023 hearing and would not be considered here today.
Some parts of your brief do refer to the answers to interrogatories. So that was my next question for you was, are you making some distinction there? Because it did appear to me that you still maintained your objection to reference to the appraisals not being evidence, but it seemed like you were also relying on the interrogatory answers.
I can appreciate that, Your Honor. There's still not evidence. What is included in the briefing as far as the answers to interrogatories and those admissions, that was largely due to correct statements that were made at the hearing and to essentially answer some of the issues brought before the court here today by way of appellant's briefing. Those answers to interrogatories, those admissions, are they part of the record? Yes. But are they evidence to be considered? No. They were not offered as evidence at the time of the July 20th, 2023 hearing, and is largely part of our argument as to why KJD LLC did not overcome the presumption of correctness when it comes to the City of T's resolution and the specific findings therein.
Well, maybe I'm missing it, but weren't they offered and then there was an objection, at least to the appraisal? And I'm not sure there was a ruling on it.
I would agree there's no ruling on it. I would disagree that they were offered. I would point the court's attention in the transcript to page 4, starting at line 18, which is when Mr. Sargent specifically addressed this. And he said, I haven't stipulated to any evidence. I mean, Mr. Moore did put evidence in the record through an affidavit, but that hasn't been offered. Objections haven't been heard. It hasn't been received. And so, again, I just wanted to state it at the forefront that I object to the appraisals being received into evidence without a more extensive foundation showing that they're relevant and they're based on an evaluation that would be relevant to the court's consideration of this matter as opposed to a condemnation case. Those appraisals were never offered. No objections were ever heard. Those appraisals are part of the record, yes, but they are not evidence that the court considered at that point in time and not evidence that this court could consider either.
So let's assume we decided that that is evidence, that it was considered by the court. The court made findings. How do we review those findings? Is it clear error or is it de novo? It's all on the record. There's no live testimony. What's our review of those, of the court's findings? I mean, it certainly made some findings in this case. How do we address those? What's our standard?
Your standard would still be the clearly erroneous standard here. You should defer to the fact finder here, which would be the trial court. If you choose to assume as the court that those appraisals were in evidence and were considered by the trial court, and the trial court still ruled that KJD did not overcome the presumption, then we defer to that fact finder, and the clearly erroneous standard would control this court's analysis here today.
But if it was, you know, and I think Mr. Moore referred to something to the effect, this is an essentially a summary judgment motion, which I think was not agreed to by opposing counsel, but if it were that scenario and it's all documentary evidence, we review those de novo on determinations on summary judgment. So there wasn't a live testimony. So would it still be a review for clear error if we were to accept that they are part of the record or part that we can consider?
It would be, Your Honor, because the way that this case should be reviewed is based upon the resolution being constitutional in nature, drafted in the shadow of Hubbard, and facts needing to be put forth by way of weighty evidence or clear and convincing evidence by the challenging landowner, and that was not done. The absence of any facts or evidence being offered by KJD at that hearing and the court's subsequent ruling on those findings, granting that its lack of evidence to make that finding, would still make it the clearly erroneous standard here before this court today. Our position is that there is no evidence that was offered by KJD LLC, and that absence of evidence makes it impossible for that presumption that is cloaked around the City of T's findings to be overcome.
Can you address, so even in those answers, the answers themselves had an objection and then an answer, objection without waiving our objection, here's our response. And I'd like you to address your relevance argument as to why you think that a city not finding a benefit with regard to condemnation is different and not relevant to this question before us.
It's different and not relevant because of what a special benefit is in the assessment context as well as the condemnation context. A special assessment, special benefit, can be across all landowners, versus in the condemnation case, it has to be specific to the one particular landowner. In the special benefit context, not only can a special benefit be general in nature, it can also be local in nature, which is what Hubbard provides, is that when a special assessment is imposed and it's general and local, we allow for both of those things to be true, and the assessment then has to contemplate that. I would draw the court's attention to the resolution that clearly lays out that sort of local versus special, local versus general analysis by way of the acknowledgement in the resolution that the improvement project is $16 million. The City of T, in the resolution, agrees to be responsible for $14,945,000 of that improvement, recognizing that the improvement, those benefits, are general, but that there are some landowners, such as KJD, that are specifically, specially benefited, and that slightly over $1 million that is left over, that is then assessed against those landowners. To go one step further, still within the resolution, how that is then assessed is laid out. I would draw the court's attention to Appellee's Appendix 4 through 10, which has the entirety of the resolution, which provides different tracts of land being specially assessed based upon the improvements that are being received, the cost of those improvements, as well as differentiation as far as whether those tracts are specifically annexed at that time into the city.
So KGD argues, you know, the belly of my property is not increased at all, and I'm assessed, and this is an unconstitutional taking. Why is that not true if the value of their market value of their property hasn't increased?
This court in Hubbard said that market valuation isn't the only thing that we look to, especially because it's a very hard thing to put out there, that it's often based on personal opinion and conjecture. So there are many other factors laid out in Hubbard that can substantiate a special benefit finding. It does not have to be monetary in nature for it not to be considered.
So what I was going to ask you is, Mr. Moore said it's got to be calculable, that special benefit. Can it be intangible?
According to this court, yes, it can.
You think Hubbard supports that notion?
I do.
And why?
In Hubbard, it talks about everything from, yes, market valuation could be one factor, but it doesn't have to be the only factor considered. It can't be.
So, for instance, you have this fire hydrant out there. Somebody's probably not going to pay more money because you now have a fire hydrant on your property, but an insurance company may look at that and say, we're going to charge you a lower rate because you got a fire hydrant within 100 yards of your property. Maybe that's something you can calculate, maybe not, but there's value.
There's some sort of value benefit
to them.
Aesthetic value, safety value, absolutely. That it may not be something we can tangibly put a $100 price tag on, but aesthetic, safety, exactly, Your Honor, I would agree. In addressing the constitutionality of the resolution specifically, drafted in Hubbard's shadow, we've gone through the specific benefits findings that are enclosed in the resolution and how the methodology was employed. It's all there within the resolution. According to Hubbard, when there's the existence of special benefits findings and an absence of a perennial no fixed sum assessment, that makes the resolution constitutional. At that point, Resolution 210404, passed by the City of T, becomes cloaked in that rebuttable presumption of correctness. Looking towards what is the procedure then, Hubbard provides for that as well. Hubbard says that if there is a challenge to a resolution, to a special assessment, it is on the landowner to shoulder that burden and bring forth clear and convincing evidence. The court even further clarifies that it needs to be weighty evidence. At the July 20th, 2023 hearing, the City of T in the resolution comes in cloaked in that presumption of correctness. The City of T does not need to bring forth anything at that point in time. The burden is completely on the landowner to bring forth weighty evidence to the contrary. And that's discussed on the record between opposing counsel and the court. The court even warning and counsel warning that this is the procedure laid out under Hubbard, understanding that that was not KJD's intent. KJD, however, chose to proceed anyways in complete disregard of Hubbard and offered no evidence into the record to contradict the City of T's presumptively correct findings. By not bringing forth any evidence, by not offering any evidence to the trial court is left with no other decision to be made other than to rule, by way of its judgment, that the presumption was not overcome by KJD LLC and to dismiss, or rather deny, the appellate relief sought therein.
So the circuit court did refer to an interrogatory answer. Do we do anything with that? Are you suggesting this court still doesn't look at the interrogatory answers or the appraisals and we just make our decision based on the resolution? Well, go ahead.
I maintain my position that the review here before the court today is the clearly erroneous standard and we defer to the fact finder. However, even if this court chose to utilize a de novo review and look at the transcript or look at those things, and I'm not conceding that you should or saying that you should, even under de novo review, they still wouldn't have overcome the presumption. There was no evidence in the record. And if you choose to review it in that capacity, yes, it is in the record, but it was not actual evidence.
Counsel, you've said a couple times that the resolution was drafted in the shadow of Hubbard. What should the court look to along those lines? Can you flesh out what you mean by that? Are you talking about the procedure? Did you represent the city in drafting the resolution at some phase? I'm trying to understand what that means.
Absolutely. When I say it's drafted in the shadow of Hubbard, if you read Hubbard, Hubbard lays out what can be considered a special benefit. It also then says there has to be specific special findings within a resolution. Hubbard then also gets into how the assessment is done, saying you can't do this blanket assessment. It isn't a situation where the project's $16 million, there's a thousand lineal feet and divided into, and everybody pays the same amount. Hubbard lays out what you can and what you can't do, what you should and you shouldn't do. So when the city of T drafted the resolution, it is done in conformance with the Hubbard decision, recognizing that if the specific findings are there, which they are, as far as special benefits, and the methodology is laid out, which it is, illustrating that it isn't this blanket approach, this fixed sum basis, that then, if challenged, then Hubbard continues to control, and that that is the procedure that would then be followed by the circuit court by way of the presumption being afforded to that resolution that's constitutionally valid and placing the burden on the challenging landowner to bring forth clear and convincing evidence at that time to overcome the presumption. Thank you.
I'm sorry, I've been wrestling with this. And so both the special benefit in both contexts, the special assessment context and the condemnation context, are relative standards. You're gauging a benefit relative to a field. The field is just different. It could overlap, but it's just different. In the context of a special assessment where we have held that benefit has to be something, benefit has to be something above and beyond or differs from the benefit enjoyed by the general public, does there have to be a determination at some point as a result of that or as a consequence of that relativity? What does the rest of the public enjoy in order to make that comparison? Does that make sense? And if so, who has to show that? Does the city have to show that? Does a challenging party have to show that?
A challenging party would have to show that. Upon a resolution including everything that Hubbard explicitly says does and does not need to be there, at that point in time, the presumption controls and the burden would be placed on the landowner to bring forth what Your Honor is talking about as far as dispute and bring it forth not by way just of argument or of assertion, but by way of actual evidence.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Moore, you can proceed with your rebuttal.
Thank you. First of all, Hubbard does not establish the procedure for an appeal under Chapter 9-43. Hubbard was in action for declaratory relief. It did not involve an appeal in this case. So the fact of Hubbard is that there was a court trial in that case because there were disputed facts. That does not mean that that established the procedure to be used in every appeal under 943, regardless of the facts of the particular case arising under 943.
You seem to concede, though, to the trial court that you could have had an evidentiary trial in one of your remarks.
And what I explicitly said to the trial court is there's no purpose because we know what the answers are. We know what the appraisers are going to say. We know what the city is going to say because of its interrogatory answers and its request for admission. I have everything that I needed to prove in writing, Your Honor. And I learned a million years ago from Arlo Somervold, I don't make the rules. I play by the rules, so tell me what the rules are and I'll play by them. Mr. Sargent and I agreed to a briefing schedule after we did written discovery. We agreed to present the legal issues created by the appeal to the court. And now the city's here saying Moore screwed it up, Moore did it wrong, Moore had an obligation to present evidence in this case. I did present evidence, but secondly, the fact is that whether the presumption arises depends on whether the resolution properly describes a special benefit versus a general benefit. And if it doesn't, there is no presumption that arises, Your Honor, and the city has not even begun to address that argument. At the end of the day, the city wants to ignore the constitutional question at issue in this case and just say, as a matter of procedure, and this is all the circuit court said as well, KJD failed to meet its burden. But with respect to the constitutional question, the comparison has to be between the assessment and the value to the property, not between the assessment and the cost of the improvement, and that's all the city did in this case, is it measured the cost of the improvement, and it assessed part of that, and it said, well, because we're assessing part of it, not all of it, that means that the assessment isn't constitutionally excessive. That's the wrong analysis. And Chief Justice Jensen, with respect to the fire hydrant example, if there were evidence in this case that there were, in fact, such a value to KJD's property, that's something that the court could consider. There is no such evidence. It's not found in the city's resolution. Evidence that isn't in the resolution can't be entitled to a presumption of correctness. And there has to be some evidence of value. That's the proposition that flows from Hubbard, which explicitly says that the assessment is limited by the value that is received by the property that is assessed, and that flows from the Village of Norwood case that says, as a constitutional matter, the amount of the assessment can't exceed the value to the property. So unless you have a method of determining that, and unless the city presents evidence that in fact the amount of the assessment doesn't exceed that, there's no presumption that can arise.
Is there a difference between an improvement and a benefit? Understanding that an improvement could result in a benefit, but we use those terms, it seems like, or maybe I've just been using them kind of interchangeably. But if the test is that one for a special benefit, and it has to be a benefit for a special assessment, it has to be a benefit that differs. It's beyond what the general public enjoys. Are we right to be thinking of this as an improvement relative to what this property had before and what it has now? That's just an improvement that brings something up to a standard. But is that a special benefit that is beyond what the rest of the field has? And so is there that difference between what improves the current status quo and whether, and a disconnect between that and evaluating whether there's a special benefit?
I'm not sure I'm completely following the question, okay. Your Honor. In this case, according to the appraisals, the highest and best use of the project does not change as a result of the improvements that are made to the street. They don't affect KJD's use of the property. KJ's use of the property is to operate a Vermeer dealership on the property, and it makes no difference to KJD's use, which the city's appraiser says is the highest and best use of the property, whether the road in front of the property is two lanes or four lanes, whether it has curb and gutter or whether it doesn't. It makes absolutely no difference, and that's what's reflected in the appraisal. And because the jury has to consider that by statute, that's why you can't walk away from the appraisals in this case. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments this morning. The case is now submitted, and we'll be in recess till 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.